So, just for the benefit of some people who are new here, what I called this was a teisho, which is a kind of somewhat formal Zen talk given by the teacher. And but it's not like an ordinary talk. For one thing, the teacher generally doesn't prepare very much for the talk, and I generally don't prepare much at all. I may contemplate sometime during the day something I might want to talk about, some general topic, and I may also pick out something like a koan I have here, which I may or may not read because I don't know how it's going to go. But the one thing that I do to prepare is I do two rounds of zazen with all of you, exactly like you're doing. So teisho comes from that space, and it's heard in that space because we've all done two rounds of zazen, and we're all sitting in zazen now. So it's a unique kind of expression that not always, but hopefully, comes from this space of zazen. Now tonight I'll try to, as I always do in these teisho, describe something about that space. Not as a way of creating a picture in your mind or something to match or something to compare to something else, but really just to point a direction, because otherwise, how would you really know where this is leading? Now, it's difficult to do that without creating ideas, without creating a map. Yet, there's no other way aside from us just sitting together, which, if all of you are willing to do that, I'd be happy not to talk. If all of you were willing to come here every Tuesday night, and we'll just do three sittings together, and you won't quit, then I don't need to do a talk. But most people need inspiration, encouragement, and pointing out of certain things, and I think it is helpful. I don't think it's a bad thing, as long as it's taken in the right spirit. Now, the spirit is the space of zazen, which is an attentive space. It's a space that's looking below the surface of thinking. So if we can both come from that space, maybe it'll be all right. So one thing I wanted to talk about, and this is partly for the benefit of the new folks here, but it's always for everyone's benefit, is what is this really? Now, it goes under the name Zen Buddhism, and I'll just define those two words. Zen is a term meaning absorption, and it is really the core of what we're learning. We're learning to absorb, or as I sometimes call it, learning to plunge into the present moment. That's what absorption is. It's sinking deeply into your actual experience of the present moment. Now, what is Buddhism? Buddhism is a tradition that arose about 2,500 years ago from the experience of a human being whose name was Shakyamuni Buddha. He became Buddha upon his enlightenment. And enlightenment means that he awoke to reality. Now, if you look at the actual pictogram in Chinese for Buddha, what you'll see are two sheaths of grass bound together. So that's the pictogram for the word Buddha. The literal meaning of Buddha is one who is enlightened. Now, the Buddha also goes by certain other honorific terms. One of them is Tathagata. I like this one in particular, Tathagata. It means one who has gone thus. One who has gone thus. Very direct. This actual experience. This is why I say that this is not about beliefs. So you hear the term Zen Buddhism, oh, it's a religion. Well, in a sense it is, but in a sense it's not. The sense that it is a religion is that it has as a foundation, and it is extremely important. And you may not get it right away, but its foundation is a certain kind of thing. And the word is that I'll describe it with is not ideal because it's a loaded word, but I think it's accurate, and the word would be faith. There's a certain faith underlying anyone who genuinely comes to this practice. So there's a faith there. I'll go into that. Now, it's not a religion because, in the ordinary sense, it harbors no beliefs. There are no beliefs in an almighty one. It's not that anyone says there isn't one, but no one says there is one. We don't deal with this. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. Find out. That's the important thing. Not to be told what to think, not to create an idea in your mind which then becomes a reality you hold onto, which then obscures your actual experience. So to assert that there is a God or there isn't a God is already to plant in someone else's mind a belief. Now this path is so beautiful, particularly in the Zen aspect. This is a particular school of Buddhism, the foundation of which is what we just did for two sittings, called Zazen. So Zen Buddhism tries to go back to the very root of what it was the Buddha was doing when he opened his eyes, saw the morning star, and then got it. So this path here has no beliefs. Beliefs are a picture of reality. A picture is going to block your actual experience. So what is it? What is it? One thing that the Buddha did do was point out actualities. And he did this in a way that was careful. He said, don't take anything I say as gospel. Do not create a belief out of it. Simply hear it and test it out. If it works for you, if it is something that in your deepest self you can embrace and really get, then keep it. And if it isn't, then throw it out. Very, very unique to have a founder of a religion, of a tradition, say that to his followers. Don't take anything I say for gospel. Test it out, and if it doesn't work for you, toss it out, throw it out. Now, there are many things that the Buddha said, but there are some very fundamental things. One fundamental thing is the first, what do you call the first of these four noble truths? First noble truth is life is dukkha. Now, the literal meaning of dukkha is suffering, incompleteness, pain, difficulty, struggle, whatever you want to call it. You might say it's very benevolent because without it, why would anyone try to look beneath the surface of things? What would be the driving force for learning a practice that is to some degree physically difficult, at least initially, that requires a certain kind of a struggle and effort, if everything was already perfect, in the sense of no suffering, no difficulty, no incompleteness, no comparison-mindedness? If those things didn't exist, you wouldn't need this. So there's a certain benevolent aspect to that fact. That fact is what takes a human being and wants them to go deeper. So they don't want to ride on the surface. How do I know that's true? Only because there are people in this room. Because if people weren't interested in that, there would be nobody in this room. Because that's what we're involved with here. We're involved with plunging into our actual experience, going underneath the surface of thinking. And that is exactly what this is. Now, how would you describe this faith coming from this first noble truth? It's paradoxical. And yes, there is some paradoxical aspect to the way that teachers describe this practice. The paradoxical thing is that just as this world is, it is perfect. Just as you are perfect. That is the underlying faith. Now, you don't get this right away. Matter of fact, you come to this practice usually with an opposite feeling, sense of lacking something, sense of being incomplete, comparing oneself to others, coming up short, feeling that there's something missing. But you also hear that intrinsic to reality is a perfection. Everything exactly as it is happening exactly as it has to. So this perfection is not the perfection of comparison, something being more perfect than something else, something matching a notion of perfection, which would be a belief. This is the perfection of something that can't be compared to anything else. It stands on its own. In this sense, this perfection is, in the term used, is absolute. This perfection is absolute, meaning incomparable, can't be compared to anything, and inevitable, could not have been any different right now. So if something can't be compared to anything, and could not have been anything but what it is. In other words, if something were the perfect outcome of everything leading up to it, inevitably, exactly like this, and therefore could not be compared to even an idea in your mind because that idea is part of this one fabric that couldn't be otherwise, that's perfection. And that is what this is, this reality. This reality is inevitable, incomparable. Exactly the way things are unfolding could only have been this way. How can anyone assert that? Because it's the way it is. It's very, very simple and basic. Now, you might call it a belief, but it's something you can actually open your eyes and see, open your ears and hear, breathe through your nose and smell. It's exactly like this. It only comes one way. Your experience in this moment only comes one way. Now, we would like in our minds to imagine it being different, perhaps. Project some kind of better reality. But that's all in the realm of thinking. That's not what is. This practice is about what is. Remember, I originally defined it as plunging into your actual experience of your present moment. Your actual experience, no beliefs, just what is. Now, as you do this practice, as you go more deeply into it, you begin more and more to get this faith side of it. Yes, just as I am already intrinsically, for want of another word, perfect. In other words, absolute, incomparable. Could not have been any different right now. If that's the case, then why am I fighting it? Why am I holding it up to some idea in my mind of something better or worse? Why am I comparing it? So as we learn to enter the space of intent observation, sometimes called mindfulness, more and more within us grows this realization, this fact, that exactly as I am already perfect. I could not have been different. I am the perfect result of causes and conditions. Nothing can be compared. I'm unique in this point in the fabric of space-time. So that led one Zen student, I often will tell this story, her name was Yaiko Iwasaki, it was around the early part of the 20th century, which seems so long ago. And she was a Zen student on her deathbed, dying of tuberculosis. And she was a very, very intent Zen student. She had to do her Zazen lying on her back. She was too weak to sit in Zazen. And she went through a series over a period of about 2 weeks of these ever-deepening awakening experiences, these enlightenment experiences. She wrote her teacher, and the letters were actually saved there in a museum now in Japan, and they're very, very famous. One line she said was, "What a relief to discover that just as I am perfect." It's very, very important to hear that in the right way. She didn't say, "What a relief for me to have done this practice and made myself perfect." She said, "What a relief to discover that just as I am perfect." This is what we are learning here. We're learning that understanding, that viewpoint, that reality. That is all Zazen is about and nothing more. It's about learning that. So we talk about the relative world, the world of comparison, the world where some things are better than others, some things are more preferable than others. Things are good or bad, right or wrong. There are gradations of value. All of that is totally valid. That's the human realm that we live in. It's very, very important. We have to learn that realm. Part of the task of growing up, part of the task of childhood, is to really learn that realm. Learn these valuations, these dividing lines. Learn how to navigate in that world of dividing lines and comparisons. We're all very, very good at it. We're grown-ups. We learned it. That's why we're here. That's how we survive. But there's a certain something missing there. If we only live on that surface level, then we can't get to that awareness that just as I am perfect. So we have this particular practice where for the period of time we're on the sitting cushion, we set aside the relative world. We don't throw it out. We don't disparage it. We don't say it's unimportant. We don't look down on it. We feel incredibly grateful that we're human beings, that we have intelligence, that we're able to do those kind of things with our mind. We're able to create maps. We're able to navigate with that very important tool of the intellect. But here we set it aside and we go in a different direction. We go into the center of our experience. Now the mind runs its tape loops. The mind continues with its maps. But we hold to one thing. This holding to one thing in your Zazen is the entry into this world of what I would call absolute, incomparable, inevitable, couldn't be different than this right now. Now the thoughts run their tape loops, but we are learning more and more to detach from our thoughts, not to fight our thoughts, but to see them as just part of this whole fabric. The thoughts, which before were so difficult and painful and stressful, become a part of the perfection, just a tiny part of it. It's part of that whole fabric of reality unfolding in the only way it can, which includes, because I'm a human being at this point in the fabric, human thoughts. But I can see them as equal to the incense smell, equal to the sound of the fan. Not better, not worse, not more valid, not more real, not less real. Thoughts are just thoughts. I detach from my involvement with them, my belief in them, my enthrallment with them, just for the time I'm sitting on the cushion. Now, when I get up from the cushion and I walk out and I start my car and I drive back into the human realm, I have really, really recharged my battery. I've learned that this is not the only side of reality there is. There's another hidden side of reality. I am now more empowered. I can still navigate in this realm, but I'm not trapped in it. I know there's something deeper. I can see through the map. I use the map, but it doesn't block my view because I can see through it to my actual experience. And this is what everyone that does devoted Zazen learns on their own, in their own way as they go along. It's hard to describe. Sometimes it seems a little miraculous. Definitely a centeredness that grows, a, a dispassion, a sense that your emotions, which used to be all over the map, are more contained and less extreme, and yet you feel things more deeply. They purify. It's just a byproduct of this practice. Why, I don't know. And it's also not the aim, because if you aim for anything in particular, you're back in the map. You're back in comparisons. Let's see, did I get it? Am I there? Did I have my awakening yet? Am I calm yet? Did I get rid of the stress yet? And then you've got the checking mind in there, looking at you, examining, comparing how you're doing this zazen to the zazen you did 2 days ago, and you're back in the map. And then at that point, you just say, I'm a human being, and human beings do that. You see it. You step back. In a sense, you zoom out. So you see that activity of mind. So you're staying with your practice, and you see that activity coming in, and you just let it come in and out. I'm just a human being. Of course my mind makes thoughts like that. How could it not? It's the product of causes and conditions. That's what I learned. So it was inevitable in this moment that thought arose and it passed through my mind. All right, but you see what's happening now? There's a change in your approach, in your attitude. You no longer are enthralled with the thought, you're observing the thought. Now you're back in mindfulness. So this is how we use zazen on the cushion. So for example, if your practice is counting the breath, one is absolute. Two is absolute. What do I mean by that? One is just one. It has no meaning. We're not doing math. We're entering into our actual experience. So we're using this tool of the count to entrain the mind to come into its actual experience without meaning. So one is just one. Two is just two. Three is just three. Thoughts come in. Four. Five. Just like that. Now, when you get really good at the count, the next step is to let the count go and just do the breathing. It's the same exact practice. The breath is absolute. It's just this actual sensation of breathing, moment by moment by moment. Not my idea of the breath. Sometimes that arises. In other words, we can get kind of sleepy-minded about our zazen, so that we're doing it in a virtual way. It's like virtuals, like virtual reality. So we're more involved with some idea about what I'm going to do when I leave here, what someone said to me yesterday, and I'm watching the breath part of my mind. I'm not totally engaged. So then I just notice that's happening and I come back into my actual present moment. Why? Because I've trained myself to do it gradually over a long period of time. I've trained my mind to do that. My mind now becomes my friend, my tool, my very, very powerful tool to pierce through this surface layer of what I called before the relative, the entrapment, the enthrallment with comparisons, maps, descriptions, back to my actual sensory experience. So now you can see through what I've said so far that this has nothing to do with belief. I never mentioned at any point any belief that you needed to have in order to do this practice. Matter of fact, this is how you get underneath belief. You actually go beneath it to something solid, something actual. You observe it with your mind. And as you persist in this practice, the mind gets better and better and better at doing that. It gets more clear. Now, part of this process requires you to embrace things as they are. Embrace yourself as you are, just as you are. Sometimes you sit in this zazen posture and something is on your mind. You're feeling sad, you're feeling anxious about something, feeling depressed about something. Why? Because you're a human being, because that's part of the human condition. If you were a tree or a chair, you wouldn't feel that. You'd maybe feel something else. But it's the karma of the reality of this moment for a human being that things happen that make us feel pain, make us feel happy, make us feel worried. It's okay. I can handle it. I'm in this posture, this balanced posture. In this posture, like a mountain, like an oak tree with roots deep in the earth, I can handle a lot. A lot can be thrown at me and I can absorb it. I can absorb it without fighting, without analysis, without comparison. I've trained myself to just be with it, which is the same as embracing it. So embracing it doesn't mean I like it, doesn't mean I want it, doesn't mean I'm not making efforts to make it better or change it or meet whatever obligation the moment I need to meet. Embracing means I recognize that in this moment it was inevitable. Embracing means I see that it is part of the whole fabric. If it could have been one iota different, that's how it would have ended up. And since I see that so clearly, I can allow it its moment in the sunshine of my awareness. And that is exactly what I mean when I use the word embrace. I don't mean you hold on to it. I don't mean you feel happy that it's there. I mean that you can, because you have trained your mind to be the spacious place, you can allow anything in your zazen to be in the sunshine of your moment-to-moment awareness. That is embracing. It's a very mature state of mind that takes deep maturity to really get it, that in this moment it couldn't have been different. I am big enough, I am spacious enough to allow this and yet not hold on to it, not push it away, not cling to it, not ignore it, not make stories about it, simply be this massive mountain. The clouds come by, it doesn't affect the mountain. This oak tree with the roots in the ground, this big, massive oak tree, a bird lands on its branches, it doesn't harm the tree, that there are many birds, a whole flock of birds. It doesn't harm the tree at all, the tree is there. It's all right, land on me. It's that attitude. You walk through the woods, I went through the woods today. Everything's frozen solid and the pine trees have this frozen snow on them. They're not saying, oh, why is there snow on me? I'd rather not have to hold this up. It's just the way it is. Pine tree becomes one with its nature. Now, in this posture, we learn in our own mind and body to do that, so that we begin to get it on that deep level. Remember, I talked about this faith, that what a relief to discover that just as I am perfect. That begins to grow in one's being. You don't have to seek it. You can hold it up as an inspiration, but it grows within you in this posture, with this attitude of mind. That is the very essence of zazen. That's what zazen is. Zazen is being the space within which your actual moment occurs. Now it goes even deeper than that. It goes deeper. I'm only giving you a little bit of it, but most of it you have to learn on your own, and then working with a teacher can be very helpful to have further practices that push you forward. For example, we have something called koan in this particular path, which are questions that you work with, initially with the intellect, but then the intellect gets frustrated because it can't figure this thing out. The question is designed to push you into a deep place, to uncover something that's hidden. What do I mean by that? Like, what's hidden? What's hidden? There's a world that we can see and smell and taste and touch. There's a colorful, colorful world here. It's full of all sorts of things, ever-changing. But there's something intrinsic to it, shot through it, embedded in it, that is colorless. What do I mean by that? It has no particular color. It is no particular sound. It is no particular smell. Everything is manifesting it. And it is the core of what you are. It's the very core of your being. It's one thing, this colorless thing. We're experiencing it right now. I could call it being, I could call it knowing, but those only create a picture in your mind. So when you do Zazen, and particularly when you work on koan, you intentionally go into the core of that. So that's a unique part of this practice. So I talked about zooming out. So really this breath practice and counting the breath and even a practice that we call shikantaza, which is what I do most of the time now, is just sit with no particular focus, allowing this actual experience of the moment to be here as one total package in all its reality. You might call that zooming out, seeing the whole fabric. You zoom out so far that there are no dividing lines. There are no comparisons. There's not even a dividing line between you and the world. It's one totality. Now, in the other direction is going into the very core of what you are, the very core of your mind, the very source. Sometimes I call it the center of the center of the center. When we do Zazen, we're doing both of these things. And as you go further in this practice, you will learn how to go in both of these directions, to zoom way, way out, and to zoom way, way in, and to live in the middle, which is our everyday life. Very, very important to have those three, those three. Now, in Buddhism, there are three worlds, or three realms, actually. We call them the kayas. It's really wonderful because they mirror exactly what I just said, but the first kaya is the Dharmakaya. It's the world, it's what they call the truth world, or the core world, or the center world, the very core of what you are, which is the same as the core of what all of this is. That's the Dharmakaya. We go there in our Zazen. It's a deep, profound Zazen. Then there's the Sambhogakaya, which is the world of forms, this colorful world, where everything is happening all the time, constantly changing. As the Buddha put it, this Sambhogakaya, this world of forms, has three aspects to it. It has three marks. He calls it the three marks of existence. One is dukkha. Now, why would the Buddha say that? Why would the Buddha say that one of the marks of existence is incompleteness, difficulty, pain, struggle? Because that way we don't need to hold up some perfect idea of perfection. This world, the way it is, with burnt light bulbs, dented cars, people slipping on sidewalks, banging my thumb with a hammer, this is the world I live in. So the Buddha just pointed it out so that you don't create in your mind some perfect realm you're heading towards. That would be the 72 virgins waiting for you, right? I mean, think of all the promises that religions hold out for people. It doesn't exist in this practice. Life is dukkha. It's just the way it is. So one of the marks of existence is that it is dukkic. Secondly, it's impermanent. Things are constantly changing from one minute to the next. Nothing can be held onto. No one lives forever. Nothing stays the same. How wonderful, how refreshing, how exciting. This is how we embrace that side of it. I'm talking about this Sambhogakaya now. And the third one is no self, meaning no dividing lines. You can't make an absolute division between one thing and another. This world is not made up of separated entities. It appears to be, but in actuality it isn't. Because whenever you go through the mental effort of trying to find the actual dividing line between you and the world, you can't find it. You look for it, but it can't be found. Every single thing in the fabric of reality affects you profoundly and vice versa. So where do you end and the world begins? These are the aspects that at this point in time, and this is the value of talks like this, we can think about, but in our Zazen we enter with our whole body. It's almost a physical entering into that reality. This is the Sambhogakaya. Now, the Sambhogakaya stands on its own. All right, the Dharmakaya is that center of the center. The Sambhogakaya is zooming way out, seeing the whole fabric of space-time, its inevitability in this moment, its ever-changing nature, its dukkhic nature. Don't hold up an idea of perfection. And the fact that when you zoom out like that, there are no dividing lines. You can't see them. You ever look at Google Earth? I love that program. Because at first you zoom way in on your house, and then you gradually zoom out and you see not just your house, but the street and then the state, and then the area of the country, then the country, then the oceans around, then all of a sudden the earth is this little marble. You can't see your house anymore. There are no dividing lines. So it's kind of like that. So then this third world is the Nirmanakaya. The Nirmanakaya is the world of action, activity. It's your interactions in the world. It's your job. It's all the things you do, but done with attentiveness, done with kindness, with a natural compassion coming from these other two realms that you're getting more familiar with. Your commitment in your actions, in every action, to do it thoroughly, do it completely, do it with quality. Why? Not for any particular reason. You can't do otherwise, because it's natural to be that way. It's natural to care about the way you live your life. So all of this comes together in this very, very simple practice called Zazen. So I hope tonight that I didn't create too many ideas. I hope I didn't create any beliefs. I hope what I did do is maybe inspire you to look a little further into it. And one other thing I want to say for the folks who are new, I admire you tremendously for what you did tonight. It is very difficult right off the bat to be thrown in the deep end of the pool like I did to all of you, where you have to sit for a half hour, your body is not familiar with this posture, your mind has not done this before. It is very courageous, but it's not a mistake. Everything happens for a reason. Everything's interconnected. Nothing happens by accident. So respect that. When you go home, don't do this to yourself. Don't force yourself to sit for a half hour. Find a comfortable posture the way I taught you. If it has to be in a chair, that's fine. Sit for 5 minutes, 10 minutes to start. Just get into the wavelength of it and gradually increase it. Maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes, whatever feels natural. Once a day, twice a day if you can. Make it natural. Make it a natural part of your life. Don't inflict it on yourself. Be very happy. Go to it as a wonderful recharge, just like you took your dead smartphone and you plugged it in and charged the batteries. That's how it's going to feel to you, if you stick with it. Let's see, I think we reached the end of our time, so we'll end there tonight. And what we'll do is we'll say the four vows together, and then you'll hear a bunch of bells, and we just bow towards the Buddha and bow to each other. And it's over. Okay, thank you.